All right, clerk, when you're ready, please call the roll.
Mr. Sinapi?
Here.
Mr. DeLuise? Mr. Foley?
Here.
Mr. Gephardt?
Here.
Mr. Kirby? Mr. Laxa?
Here.
Mr. Nudo?
Here.
Mr. Napa?
Here.
Mr. Ricks?
Here.
All right, Councilman Gephardt, could please lead us in the salute to the flag?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic on which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly
First up is general communications. Announcements and congratulations, condolences, or community events. Does anyone have anything for this? Councilman Lattiser.
Oh, yes, thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to ask for a moment of silence for a very good friend of mine, also a longtime former employee and a Warwick resident, William Clock, who passed away over the weekend.
If we could have a moment of silence for Mr. Clark. Does anyone else have anything from congratulations, condolences, or community events? Seeing none, we can move on to the next item. Presentation regarding scope and results of the City of Warwick's fiscal year 2024 audit by Jennifer Cook, CPA / Clifton Larson Allen. This is information only. You all received a packet in case the screen is difficult to see. And just a disclaimer, I'm going to relocate to the table for the same reason. So floor is yours at your convenience.
Great. Thank you so much. Jennifer Cook, signing director with CLA. I just want to start off. I know this is the first time that we're presenting in front of the City Council. So in the future, if you would like different information presented, I'm happy to adjust that going forward. So quickly, I'm going to hit on the audit scope, our audit opinions, the required communications, some financial statement highlights, as well as some upcoming GASB standards. Get right into it. Oh, thank you. All right. So first is our audit scope, what were we engaged to do? Report on the city's financial statements to provide reasonable assurance that the financial statements are free from material misstatements, as well as evaluate the internal controls around financial reporting. We do not provide an opinion on the effectiveness of these controls, but we are required to communicate if we identify material weaknesses or significant deficiencies around those controls. We also have required governance communications, which I will specifically go through the required components of that. And then we also do a report on internal control over compliance, as well as compliance with the federal programs. So audit results for 24, we did have an unmodified opinion on the financial statements, as well as unmodified opinions on the federal awards. Regarding, as I mentioned, the internal controls, we did identify one material weakness surrounding the review, reconciliation, and timely reporting at the school department. the federal awards, we did not identify any material weaknesses. However, we did have two significant deficiencies and compliance findings related to two of the programs, which I will get to at a later slide. So required governance communications, if you look in note one of the financial statements, that's really goes through your significant accounting policies. One of the key things is GASB 100 was effective during fiscal year 2024, and that around errors and in financial statements as well as changes in reporting entity. We did not have any uncorrected misstatements. We did not have any disagreements with management. We did have a slight delay related to the issuance of those statements as a result of delays in receiving audit documentation. The two significant estimates, as part of the audit, we will review the estimates and the assumptions around going that go into the calculation of those amounts. And we consider the two highest uncertainty around OPEB and pension. The last thing is the modification to our opinion. There was a restatement to the prior issued financial statements, and that is fully described in note 20 of your financial statements around the reflection of payroll withholdings at the school department. Quickly, I just wanted to go and kind of show a trend of what we call the governmental funds fund balance as it relates for the last 5 years. I think the most crucial thing here is the unassigned fund balance in the general fund. I think it's remained pretty consistent at a healthy unassigned fund balance related to that. I also did want to draw attention to the school unrestricted fund. I know that probably is not a shock, but you can see the trend related to the fund balance to the deficits reported over the last 5 years. Total governmental funds, that includes all your special revenue, capital projects. So you'll see big swings there. For instance, in 2022, that large jump specifically relates to bond issuance before the spending occurred. So it's more really meaningful to look at your general fund and school unrestricted fund. Significant disclosures around net pension liability. I just wanted to put a visual here to see the changes in your liabilities between 23 and 24. You'll see the city has four plans, as you're well aware, and the school has two. The school has one that's within the control of setting assumptions, and then there's the state plan, which is really outside of the control of the school in determining the assumptions and measurement of that liability. As you can see, the discount rate has stayed the same the last two years. And then what the measurement date, everything is measured as of June 30th, 2024, with the exception of the state plan, which is measured 1 year behind. The OPEB liability is the next significant disclosure. I put the note number for reference if you were to look at the financial statements. You'll see a decrease in the city's liability, as well as I wanted to put the net position as you established the trust a few years ago. You're continuing to increase that balance, and it affords an increased discount rate on your assumptions because it is taking into consideration the future funding of those liabilities. As it relates to the school does not have a trust, and therefore they have to use the municipal bond rate. So they all tend to have a lower rate as it relates to the OPEB assets. Related to the single audit, for fiscal year 2024, there was approximately $23.6 million in federal spending. We audited four programs as a result of our risk assessment, and that was the coronavirus state and local government fiscal recovery funds, or more commonly known as ARPA funding. We had one finding around reporting, and that's around the accuracy of reporting, and that has been corrected. Child nutrition cluster, better known as your school lunch program, we did not identify findings there. The SAFER grant, we did not identify any findings in that program. And congressionally mandated projects is a few new grants that the city has received, and again around reporting, which has been corrected. Lastly, I just want to make the council aware of some upcoming GASB standards that's going to impact your future financial statements. So the biggest one is GASB 101. That's going to be effective for your June 30th, 2025 financial statements. And really, this takes a look back at and understanding what liabilities are reported around compensated absences and brings into this more likely than not. Typically, what we're recording is what you're obligated to pay, you know, at a point in time. Now it's saying, what are you likely to pay? And will require the city to establish assumptions around what that liability looks like, as well as requiring liabilities for known leaves that are occurring as of year end, such as parental leaves, military leaves. So we will be working with management of both the city and school regarding the implementation for the 2025 audit. 102 is also in effect for the June 30th, 2025 audit. And this really is enhanced disclosures about certain risks or concentrations that the city has. An example is if there was one employer that was a significant amount of your, you know, tax revenue, and they notified you that they're going to leave Warwick, right? That there needs to be a triggering event that would require disclosure. So we'll work with, again, management to determine if any of those are identified. GASB 103 is not until your fiscal year 2026 audit, and this is really just to create some more consistency. The biggest impact, I would say, is MD&A requiring more information related to that, as well as your presentation of proprietary funds and how certain revenues and subsidies that would be presented. So again, we will work with management about how this will impact the city going forward. Lastly is GASB 104, and this is just, again, to create some consistencies on how some of the previous standards, so the GASB 87 around leases, GASB 96 around subscription-based assets, how they're presented in the financial statements and how they're disclosed to make sure it's consistent among communities. So with that, that's the end of our presentation. I know that like I said, I would love to continue to do this and take feedback in the future about what's important that you want us to report on each given year.
Thank you very much. And fellow council people, keep that in mind about the feedback to send my way. Consider this pretty much a trial run of what we'll do, hopefully, going forward. Moving along, for executive communications, we have none.
Council President.
Yep, what's up?
To clarify, the presentation we just heard was informational only, so there are not going to be questions at this time?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you for clarifying.
Next up is acceptance of minutes from the council meeting held on October 6, 2025. Does anyone have any objection with accepting the minutes as presented? Seeing none, so accepted. Next, we have public comment, rule 41. After general communications and prior to the consent calendar at the last regularly scheduled meeting of the City Council each month, there shall be a period of time not to exceed 30 minutes during which citizens may comment about Warwick City government issues subject to the following stipulations. The total period of time for public comment shall not exceed 30 minutes. Comments need to be brief in order to allow as many citizens as possible to participate. Each citizen signed up and present shall have not to exceed 5 minutes to speak. Provided, however, that if more than six citizens are signed up and present, the 30 minutes will be split evenly amongst speakers. Time shall not be transferable amongst speakers. The topics for comment shall be issues directly affecting city government. City council members will not respond to questions during the public comment period. The public comment session will terminate at the expiration of the earlier of all speakers, concluding their allotted time or 30 minutes. Waiver of this provision requires a unanimous vote of the council. First up, we have Rob Cody. All right, we'll circle back at the end. Next up, we have Lisa Cotlin, and I apologize if I'm butchering pronunciation.
Okay. I'm here because I had spoken.
I apologize for interrupting, but before you start, just say your name for the record for people.
Lisa Cotlin.
Thank you.
And it's with a K. I had spoken with our council person, Brian Mappa, who's been very helpful. We live, we're, condo owners at Forest Pond Condominiums, and we're having a lot of problems with trash and debris in the property. We have approached the site manager numerous times. We watch the landscapers they've hired blow trash and debris, not just to the perimeter of the property, and it just blows right back in, but to the directly down the hill to Forest Pond. I took a lot of pictures. We've been there now 2.5 years. Nothing's being done, and we're concerned. I don't know who else to come to but the council. We just recently, and Mr. Knapp, I just gave you some information on that. They just recently replaced all the mulched gardens in the entire complex with crushed stone. They hired a company to come and dig approximately 6 or more inches down into all of these plots, and we watched as commercial size wheelbarrows were again taken to the edge of the property down to the stream. I don't know what else we can do but come here. There aren't enough trash containers for the amount of residents. There's 42 units in Forest Pond Condominiums, and we have 2 trash dumpsters and 1, I'm sorry, 2 recycle. The second mixed recycle was added a few months ago because we complained about all the trash being everywhere. We get appliances and furniture and things that are not supposed to be dumped there. Mattresses will stay there for months. The residents are getting better. There are only 7 on-site condo owners. 3 of the individual condo owners rent out. And the other 32 units are all renters, and they rent from Forest Pond developers. I don't know where else to go. I myself have put up signs. We asked that the flaps be repaired on the dumpsters because people were dumping air conditioners on top. We're central air, so I don't know where the air conditioners were coming from, but it broke a lot of the covers. Instead of fixing them or replacing them, they've been torn off. So we have no covers along the front of the dumpsters. The critter situation is not pleasant, and the trash situation throughout the complex. We're elderly. I'm tired of picking up trash. It blows constantly. There is a corral, but it's not encased. So that was all I wanted to do, was come here and talk to the council.
You have 1 minute, Mrs. Cotlin.
Yep, that's it. I mean, I have, if anyone wants, I do have pictures. I made copies. Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next is Lori Mance. And again, I apologize for pronunciation.
Hi, yes, you got it right. Lori Mance. Also live at Forest Pond. And my concern has pretty much been pointed out by Lisa. My biggest question is, how do we get the covers that are on those trash containers repaired and replaced, because that in itself would take care of a lot of the problem. So, thank you.
Thank you. Next is Michelle Comar.
Michelle Comar, good evening, Council President and Councilman. Hopefully I get to squeeze in 2 topics tonight. Thank you, Council President, for inviting the auditors to do the report and the presentation today. I see in your council rule amendments that might be an annual basis. That would be wonderful. I hope that those presentations will be on the technical reports. We get to the meat of the matter. And that I hope they're held at public hearings so that the council people, as well as the public, can make comments, ask questions, give input. That would be a really good thing to have. We have the other financial consultant come in during a public hearing. I think both groups should be before the council and the public to take questions. And my next topic is the street lights at Hoxie Four Corners, which I think is in the border of Route 2, Ward 2 and Ward 3, I believe, or Ward 4. So everybody's conscientious about the speeds and the cameras. And I've learned on my way even coming here, I watched the Warwick Avenue right turn onto Airport Road. That's a right on red legal turn. However, when the green arrow comes on, there's no yellow after it. So people get photographed actually going through a red. And there's a lot of concern from the public that they're going to be fined for this maneuver now that we have cameras everywhere. I don't know if anyone's contacted DOT with this issue. That would be Warwick Avenue southbound, turning right onto Airport Road to check that traffic signal and request that DOT add a yellow arrow to give people the chance to clear the intersection and not get caught in a red picture, a red light picture. Thank you for your time. Bye now. Thanks.
Thank you. And circling back, Rob Cody.
Apologize for being late. I have a few comments, but I wanted to show you guys this chart.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I know it's tedious. Can you just please state your name?
Rob Cody, Ward 7. I want you guys to take a look at this chart. This is what happened since Chief Peter McMichael took over the Warwick Fire Department with overtime. It's gone from 1.7 million to 6 million. So in any municipal department, the department head's responsibility is to manage the department in the safest and most cost-efficient method and in the best interest of the taxpayers. Let me give you some statistics on the management skills of the current Warwick Fire Department Chief, Pete McMichael, based on APRA requests. Since he was hired, overtime has increased from $1.7 million in 2018 to $6 million in 2022 and currently $4.6 million now. In 2024. That's with cost overruns from what was budgeted. He's used $8.8 million over and above what's been budgeted every year. Sick time has increased from 1,100 days to 1,700 days. Change of shift has increased from 1,200 annually to 2,666 in 24. It's clear by the official documents that since the unused sick time scheme was ended in May of 2019, an immediate revolving sick out has taken place, fleecing the taxpayers of millions of dollars. Now, although the chief will make the statement, as other chiefs have in the past, that the change of shift has no impact on the schedule, he, of course, is blatantly lying. He will tell you that it's a mutual exchange of time. So let me tell you why it's not. As an example, Cameron Boyasian took off 50 days change of shift. He gave back zero. He was paid for 50 days for not working, over $20,000. Gabriel Silva took 30 changes a shift, but he came in and worked 74. Does anybody really think that out of the kindness of his heart, he came to work for 44 days for free? He didn't. So what's taking place, and a matter of fact, On that note, Victoria Governo, with changes in shift and sick time between 2022 and 2024, missed 183 days of her regularly scheduled shifts. So in Warwick, we have a volunteer fire department. You come in when you want. When you want to work, you don't. You call your buddy, and your buddy goes and covers for you while you go and you work your side gig. Well, how do I know that? Because interestingly enough, a Warwick firefighter, an honest guy, reached out to me and explained the entire scheme, how they pay each other to come in and work for them. They pay each other under the table, and they don't report the income. That's another story. And then they go to work on their side gigs. And they pay each other electronically, and sometimes they pay each other cash. This is a fact. This is what's going on. And I've been telling you guys this for years. You know, I have to tell you that something's going to change. I understand that Councilman Foley is out stumping for the fire department, talking to council members, even pressuring them, you got to vote for this. Why? Why are we doing this? In the last contract, it stated if we move to the Boston schedule and it shows an increase in operational costs, the city will revert back to the original schedule. Why didn't the mayor catch it? He didn't catch it. Massive overtime increases. City council didn't catch it. The prior city council got 10 monthly reports, news reports, and 3 quarterly statements. Massive overtime increase. He didn't do anything. Why is the mayor pushing this unbelievable contract coming up?
1 minute, Mr. Cody.
Votes. He needs votes because he's incapable of making any other income. So I want to say something to you guys. I implore the council, particularly Mr. Sinapi, to scrutinize this contract and demand accountability on the abuses that I continue to showcase in both the number of sick days and the change of shift, and hold the fire chief accountable for his complete mismanagement of this department. This council only needs 3 things to manage the city. 1, the ability to recognize a problem. 2, a problem-solving skill set. And 3, most importantly, the balls to take action. That's what your constituents want. Show some guts. Stand up to what's wrong. Stand up to the abuses. These are the facts. You can't deny the facts. That's from official city documents. You guys need to do something about it. The mayor won't look at it. He can't comprehend the math. In the meantime, we're getting fleeced. The mayor, the fire chief, and the council has ignored the contract stipulations, and you need to focus. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our list for public comment. So we'll move on to appointments requiring confirmation. Land Trust Commission, we have Edward Ruggiero Jr. This is intergovernmental, so Councilman Gebhardt.
Committee recommended favorable action.
For action, Councilman Foley.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Any further questions or comments? Seeing none, clerk will please call the roll.
Oh, right, yeah. Mr. Sinapi.
Yes.
Mr. DeLuise.
Yes.
Mr. Foley.
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt.
Yes.
Mr. Kirby.
Yes.
Mr. Lattisa.
Yes.
Mr. Muno.
Yes.
Mr. Napa.
Yes.
Mr. Ricks.
Yes.
9 yes, appointment passes.
Next, we have the consent calendar, but first, Council Solicitor.
Councilman Lattiser has asked to have one more item voted separately from the package. So if you would like, I can. It's
yes, please.
Bid 2026-216 regarding the ice skating rental revenue with the is now PCR 125-25 and will be voted separately from the consent calendar.
Thank you.
All right, so first up is PCR 122-25, resolution relative to bid. This is Finance Committee, Councilman Lattiser.
Committee recommends favorable action.
For action, Councilman Lattiser.
Move favorable action.
Second.
And yeah, the report on the items removed, please.
Yes, we have three. We have item 2026-216, now PCR 125-25. We have item number six, repair pots for snow plows. That is now PCR 123-25. And we have item number 12, 2026-228, which is now PCR 124-25.
Any questions on the consent calendar that weren't already asked during committee? Seeing none, we have a motion, we have a second. So clerk will please call the roll on the consent calendar.
Mr. Sinapi?
Yes.
Mr. DeLuise?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Kirby?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. Muto?
Yes.
Mr. Napa?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
And yes, consent
passed. All right, and now the items removed. First on my list is bid 2026 to the 200. Let's try it again. Bid 2026-204, PCR 123-25. Councilman Lattiser?
Yes, the committee had recommended favorable action.
All right, for action. Based on the committee vote, Councilman Napa, for action.
Motion move favorable.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Any further questions or comments on PCR 123-25 that weren't already made in committee?
Yes, Mr. President, I'm going to be voting no on that, as I did in committee. And the reason is this issue of just awarding bids because of a percentage of discount and nobody knowing what a list price is, or at least list price on the items that are most commonly used, makes absolutely no sense to me. As I said in committee, there's no one in this chamber that would go out and buy anything and buy it predicated upon a discount without knowing what the net costs are. And I think that is just, it's a dangerous precedence. And it's something that appears as though it's starting to return. At one point in time, it had stopped, and every bid was coming to us was having anywhere from 20 to 25 items showing a list price with a discount. And that's the only way you can have bids fair and encourage vendors to bid. That was why years ago, when we're having difficulties getting vendors to bid, particularly on auto parts, as an example, it was because there was this feeling that why bother? City just goes with whoever the highest discount is. But you have no idea what your starting point is. And we had changed that. And we were getting bids showing what discounts were. And I think that's a reasonable ask. I think that's a reasonable business model to do so. And I think it's unreasonable and unwarranted to just go ahead and approve something because somebody gives you a discount and will take a look at it or check on it later. That is not prudent business. And this is why I will not be voting in favor of this. It's not because we don't, or I don't feel we need the pots. I do. But I feel that the process is flawed with the way it is. Thank you.
So again, for people going forward, we're looking for any comments or concerns not having been raised in committee. So Councilman Muto?
I'll defer to Councilman.
Oh, Councilman Gephardt?
Oh, thank you. Just so that we don't, I just want to make sure what I heard from the business director of the DPW was that there is an extensive parts list that we are making purchases against, and the availability of an online portal that provides all of the pricing for all of the items that we could ever imagine purchasing, and that those items and their prices prior to any purchase are reviewed to find the most advantageous price for the city. So I think that the characterization that has been made is patently misinformation. And I think the committee saw that, which is why they made a favorable recommendation and why I will support this when it comes up to a vote. Thank you.
All right, so are you still deferring or you wanna come back?
No, if somebody else has something, go for it.
I got no other lights, so.
It's just me.
So Councilman Mito?
Thank you. I understand the difficulty that Councilman Lattiser has mentioned, as well as the points that that other council people in the director has said. There must be a way that we can get some assurances. Maybe it's just an education. Maybe we need to see what the process is. I will be supporting this for tonight, but I believe there should be some confidence building communication for future endeavors of this nature.
All right, seeing no further lights, and we have a motion for favorable action that was seconded. Clerk, will please call the roll. Oh, we're reaching for mics.
Mr. Snappy?
Yes.
Mr. DeLuise? Yes. Mr. Foley? Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Kirby?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
No.
Mr. Muto?
Yes.
Mr. Napa?
Yes.
Mr. Rex?
No.
7-2, motion passes.
Next, we have bid 2026-228, which is now PCR 124-25. Councilman Lattiser?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. This was a request of the administration, primarily Major Hott, to correct a typo in the amount, and that amendment was to change the dollar amount from $2,995.50 to $2,992.50, and that was with favorable action from the committee.
All right, so for action, Councilman Lattiser, do you want to make that amendment?
Move favorable action on PCR 124-25 as amended.
Second.
Do we have to make the amendment first? All right. So this is on the amendment. There's a motion and a second to amend. Any further question on the amendment? So seeing none, clerk will please call the roll.
Mr. Snappy?
Yes.
Mr. DeLuise?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Kirby?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. Muto?
Yes.
Mr. Napa?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
9 yes to amend.
All right, and now Councilman Lattiser as amended.
Move favorable action on PCR 124-25 as amended.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Any further questions or comments? Seeing none, clerk will please call the roll.
Mr. Snappy?
Yes.
Mr. DeLuise?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt?
Yes.
Mr. Kirby?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. Muto?
Yes.
Mr. Napa?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
9 yes as amended.
All right, next we have bid 2026-216, which is now PCR 125-25. Councilman Lattiser, you had wanted this pulled out.
Well, yes. Thank you, Mr. President. So this was assigned PCR 125-25. I'm not quite sure how to proceed from this point.
So I received a favorable recommendation, right? So we'll do that part first. Anyone on the committee willing and able to move it favorable as recommended, and then we can move on to discussing?
Motion move favorable as recommended.
Motion made and seconded. All right, for discussion, Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you. So in considering this more since the meeting, as I had pointed out during the committee meeting, the vendor is going to be utilizing and occupying city property. And doing so at no cost. So the more I think about this, the more concerned I get, and the question comes to mind, does the administration have the authority to allow a vendor to use taxpayer property on a consistent basis at no charge. I think the fact that rental income has just been dismissed, that alone unto itself is a concern, but I question the authority. Is this opportunity for a vendor to use city property at no expense something that should have come before the city council for approval? The other concern I have is nothing was mentioned about insurance or liability. So you have a vendor with at least no lease, no rental agreement, no occupancy agreement, utilizing and conducting business in a city space, city property. What is the liability that the city could face as a result of someone getting injured in that booth? Someone getting injured on the skates? I think there's a lot of consideration here that needs to be considered, and certainly questions that I feel deserve to be answered. The biggest one is, does the administration have the authority to allow a vendor to use city property, which is being paid for by taxpayer dollars, whether it's federal taxes or property taxes, without council approval?
So just so I'm clear, are you asking for a legal opinion from our solicitor, or are you asking the city to give their, because their attorney's not here, so give the lay answer?
Well, if nobody can answer, then perhaps we should hold it until someone can answer.
Well, that's why I'm asking, so who exactly are you looking for an answer for? Because we have our council solicitor.
I'm looking for a legal opinion. Not just I'm looking for a legal opinion, not just an opinion that says, yeah, we think we can do it.
So, Council Solicitor?
In reflecting on your question, it would appear that they are providing some benefit to the bargain. They are giving a share of revenue for the right to do an activity in a place to generate money. So they are part of a compromise of sorts between the two. They are paying in some sense, they're sacrificing, they're foregoing revenue that, albeit in this case 10%, they are paying for some right to use these facilities.
That's paying like with penny candy. This monetary amount that we're talking about is nowhere near the value of that space per square foot. So how does that value just get brushed aside and say, we're going to go ahead and allow that space to sit there because they're giving us a commission and they're using the space without any compensation or rent? I shouldn't say compensation, without any rental.
Respectfully, I would suggest that it may not be a legal issue, but it's a business decision that is pending before the nine of you to decide as to whether that benefit of the bargain is worth what it's.
So your opinion is that it is legal for them to just arbitrarily allow a vendor to use city property for free?
That is not my opinion.
What is it then?
My opinion is that there have come to an arrangement through a publicly bid process that you can decide whether that value proposition is worth it or for you or not. But it is in order, it is available for you to proceed should the body wish.
So I'm not getting the answer to my question.
Respectfully, the framing of it, I think, goes further than what I would opine. Mm-hmm. And we're into semantics between the legal and the prospects are political. So
if we can't get if I can't get an answer here tonight, where do I go to get an answer?
I mean,
I believe I've answered the question, just not in the words that you would like.
So that's what I was going to say, that it's like a two-part issue here. One, you received an answer. It's just not not so much what you're looking for. It's just not necessarily put in the way you prefer it be put. But as far as elsewise, as far as getting an answer, I mean, just like anything else, we're entitled to submit questions or to ask anything of the administration, be it now or thereafter. And obviously, if you submitted said question and it somehow was not lawful, even though it, by all accounts, based on what the solicitor said, it is, then they wouldn't be able to proceed anyway, regardless of what we do tonight.
So, as I said when I asked for the PCR, this is something that came to mind again during questioning in the committee. So I guess we're saying that it's okay for the administration to allow someone to use space here in City Hall if they, you know, want to contribute pennies. And it's okay to use space in the Sawtooth Building with no rent. That's what I'm hearing.
I mean, it sounds like you're hearing what already is the process, such as any entity or person can request to use city space at any time and potentially be given the right to do so. Various entities on occasion, well, not just occasion, regularly utilize city space and at times charge entrance fee for that space or various fees for the content of what's happening within that space in the city. Collects none of it on a regular basis because of the nature of the permitting process and the ability to grant use of space. This is a not abnormal practice. Generally speaking, I'm not saying the specifics that we have before us because obviously we don't have this particular kind of structure until, well, soon.
With all due respect, Mr. President, in the 13 years I've been here, I have never seen the city allow anybody to use city property, which is being supported with taxpayer dollars, for free.
I can cite several. I know the Greater Warwick Lions regularly uses city property, and we charge for entrance into said property for a car show. And we have raffles, we do all sorts of stuff. That's just one of the many entities, all of which regularly have events and whatnot. I mean, various soccer leagues, you name it, there's a lot.
Those are one-time issues. Those are not a business relationship that is in a continual relationship.
I mean, some of them, in fact, are. Hence, again, I'll use the example of the Greater Warwick Lions, which is this the same thing. I mean, I don't need to tell the city, but and any of you who've already been, you know, it's there on a set schedule every year and has been, geez, for decades now. I'm old. It's weird to be able to say decades. Sorry. Personal. Oh.
And I assume the city is going to or have already attained the appropriate insurance certificates, hold harmless agreements, or whatever else is necessary to protect the city from another lawsuit?
Bill Facenti, Chief of Staff, it's in the bid as a requirement that the vendor has liability, general liability, and workers' comp insurance. This is an actual business that has a bricks and mortar store across from the rink. They've been in business for 25 years in Warwick. So they have all their liability and general liability and workers' comp insurances. We will be getting a certificate as listed as a certificate holder as required in the RFP.
Okay. I'm done for now.
All righty. Councilman Gephardt.
As I sit here, I have to chuckle because I could only imagine the outrage if the proposal tonight was to hire multiple attendants to be stationed in the rink, to purchase several hundred pairs of skates, to then manage that entire process, collect fees, and all of that before we even know what the attendance will be like, what the demand for skate rental will be like, et cetera, et cetera. That scenario, which I think would be laughed out of this room, is the alternative to what we have before us tonight. And so I think it's an incredibly responsible move on the part of the city to say, hey, we have a new facility. We have no real benchmark to know what the revenue is going to be. We have no real benchmark to know how many skate rentals we're going to do, what the hours are going to be, how many staff we're going to need, so on and so forth, what the expertise is required to fit the skates and sharpen them and refurbish them and all of the things that go along with that. And so for 2 years, we will have the opportunity to observe a professional run a skate rental shop out of our brand new facility. We will know exactly the volume of rentals because we will be getting a 10% share of whatever happens there. Obviously, having skates at a skate rink is part of the sort of cost of doing business of having said skate rink. And so this is just part of what we need to do in order to open this facility. And I think that this indemnifies us of all risk because we are not hiring staff, we are not buying skates, we are not doing anything except opening the doors, letting someone who knows how to do this activity do the activity. If we look at it a year from now or a year and a half from now and we say, man, those guys are making money hand over fist renting skates at the skate rink, then I think we could consider, should we staff one or two people? I mean, I'm just doing back of the napkin math. If we're open 50 hours a week at $15 an hour, it's about $40,000 a year for one attendant. Now, there may be peak volume where you need two attendants. So, you know, is the alternative that we add $100,000 to the budget to fund staffing the skate rental shop? I don't know. To me, it feels absurd. So I think this is a responsible move, gets the facility open. We can see what kind of usage we get and we can make a wiser decision down the road. That's just my two cents. Thank you.
Councilman Knappel.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to just echo Councilman Gebhardt. I think he makes some valid points. Well, I think Councilman Lattiser also brings up some valid concerns. I think the issue of pushing this idea that the city is giving away the space for free is sort of misleading. We don't need to bifurcate the agreement and allocate one thing specifically for rent and another thing specifically for revenue share. I would assume that was contemplated and it was purportedly agreed upon by the city that the 10% share would associate with some portion of usage of our space, or the city space rather, and an adequate share of revenue share included in that 10%. Now, granted, that's not market if we're looking at square footage rent, but there are, I would venture to say, absolutely zero people that are going to rent the amount of space that they're going to use at market rate. If they rent at market rate and they're renting out skates at $10 a piece, they're going to be in the hole. So that would be a terrible business proposition for whomever would be interested in getting that space. We would never be able to fill it if we were trying to rent it at market rate to yield that amount of revenue and then also take a profit share off of the skates they're renting. And like Councilman Gebhardt said, this is a good test of a litmus test of let's see what kind of revenue actually comes in the door, what kind of volume we get and who is renting these skates, and we can take next appropriate steps. If we have a bad deal, then we can renegotiate when the time comes. Whether or not people on the council agree with the negotiating prowess or ability of the people negotiating these contracts, that's a separate issue aside. But I think what's in before this council tonight is a very good first step to get in the door and say we're getting something in return for what we're allowing someone to come into our facility and run for us. It's a no cost to the city. It's only revenue generating. And if it goes well or poorly, we can adjust accordingly. But like Councilman Gebhardt said, we have no basis to operate from. We would be assumptions only. So I would fully support the administration's effort on this to get this ball moving forward.
Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I have to respectfully disagree with a couple of my colleagues. I hope that they are open to some additional information and feedback here. First, I have a lot of hesitation here because we only received one bid, and it happens to be a bid from a vendor who works with the city. When there's a lack of competition, lack of different numbers coming in, that's always going to make me hesitate a little bit. So I did run some of the numbers here as well. Now, I understand some of the numbers that were just stated, but I do have to question those because this is essentially an operation for a little bit over 4 months per year. I think it's a grand total of, at maximum, barring inclement weather, I believe it's around 124 days, but there will be inclement weather. Let's round down for a moment to 120 days. If it's 120 days, then at $9 a skate, if it were at the absolute maximum capacity, then we're talking $6,300 a day. Of course, we can't expect maximum capacity because there are going to be some people who bring their own skates. And on any given day, especially weekdays, you're not going to see the maximum number of people showing up anyway. So in a low turnout scenario, and this is unfortunately another area where I do disagree, if it's a low turnout scenario and we only really need one person in the ticket booth, guess what? The city is already putting one person in that ticket booth to operate one cash register. And with the vendor there, at all times, there would be at least two people operating two different cash registers. We already have someone there. We can consolidate the operation. So what I'm saying is that the city has a competitive advantage over any vendor in a low turnout scenario because we already have someone there. And if it turns into a scenario where multiple people are needed, weekend days, great weather, we need a second person there, well, that's also doable. Now, every job involves skills. So-called unskilled work, no such thing. All work that's paid involves some level of skill, of course. But the level of training that's needed to get someone to be able to sharpen a pair of ice skates is less than the level of training that would be necessary for someone to, say, replace an engine in an automobile. We have people in the city who are fully capable of sharpening ice skates and teaching a new person how to sharpen ice skates. Right? Even with our fire department, police department, we have people who play recreational hockey. A lot of people, I'm not one of them, but a lot of people know how to sharpen ice skates, and I don't think it's necessarily going to be an incredibly difficult skill that's necessarily a lot more difficult than how to sharpen knives. A little bit different, but we're not talking about training someone to do incredibly highly skilled specialized work. So in a low turnout scenario, the city has the competitive edge here, and then instead of a vendor getting the cash cow here, the 90%, the city is getting that money. The city can also buy skates in bulk. There's many places that can be done. Ice skates when bought in bulk, when, guess what? We're not expecting this ice rink to close a year from now. We're expecting many, many years of operations. And if the ice skates, if they get relatively little use in a given year, well, guess what? Less wear and tear, they'll last for more years. So that's the low turnout scenario. The high turnout scenario, wonderful, even more money for the city. We also heard that the city would charge a separate attendance fee of between $5 and $10. There's still some decisions being made. So if it's at the low end as to the attendance you know, the ticket to get in, then it makes all the more sense for the city to be taking care of the rental operations, because that's where the money is. It hardly makes sense for the city, in my opinion, to be allowing for a majority of the money to go out the door. The way that the ice skate is rink is going to generate money is from the people attending who are entering the rink, paying their admission ticket, paying for the ice skate rental, and also, of course, the city is bringing in some money from other ways, but we want this rink to be self-supporting. And the ice skate rentals, that's a huge part of the potential revenue coming in on this. So I think that in either of the scenarios, the low turnout, the high turnout, I think that the city is probably best positioned here to just handle the ice skate rental portion in-house, along with handling the admissions portion. And for those reasons too, especially because this is the very first year of operations, I'm not so sure it's a great idea to have a two-year bid. I'd be a little bit more comfortable with a one-year bid, but when we're putting out a two-year bid, only getting one response back.
So Councilman Ricks, just so I'm following, you don't want the bid, but if we do have it, you want it to be 1 year.
I would prefer it to be 1 year. I'd be open to that. I do have some other concerns here too, because in the response, in the addendum, the whole bit about the ability to sell merchandise, that scares me a little bit. I'm not so sure that that's the best practice to be putting that out there. And there's a bit of a lack of clarity as to whether the city would be getting 10% of that, whether that's merely a matter of the city being open to further negotiations on that point, and any say addendum of this 10% cut contract, if that would be something that would come back separately to the city council. So that is a bit of a legal question right there, because I don't want us to be in a situation where a different vendor comes back to us and says, hey, wait a minute, there was a second revenue stream here, and if I had known that, then I would have bid. Or, well, I mean, the whole thing is a little bit loosey-goosey from that, and I think that the better practice would have been to just stick clear of that and say, could be considered possibly in the future, but it's not part of this bid, or so some other way to dodge that rather than to open up that possibility. It scares me a little bit with the city's potential liability there. And for that matter, would that necessarily prevent the city from competing with the sale of those of certain additional goods? The city shouldn't be competing with its own vendor after telling the vendor that, yes, you can do this. So that's another set of concerns here. I mean, all in all, I think that it simply makes sense for the city to handle this in-house. But I suppose that I'd be a little bit more comfortable with a one-year contract. Unfortunately, a one-year contract is not what's in front of us.
Councilman Muto.
Thank you.
I'm a little torn on this myself. However, it is low impact, I want to say, financially for the city. I'm more in favor of it because it is a Warwick business that is taking this over. My only concern is, I will share with Councilman Ricks, is the length of the contract, or at least an option. But again, it's low impact, so I'm not going to die in the vine there. But the second part is more of a concern of what guarantees do we have that, the low turnout, they have to come up with the body. Will that body be there? And if the body isn't there, what are our repercussions? That's actually probably the biggest concern. But other than that, it's a low impact for me.
Councilman Foley.
No one else having a light on, I move the question.
No other lights on, question's been moved. Clerk will please call the roll. Yes.
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 Yes. Yes. No.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Next, we have PCO 16-25, an ordinance amending the zoning ordinances of the City of Warwick Three Kids, LLC, applicant 1112 West Shore Road, assessor's plat 333, lot 103. This is second passage, public properties.
Recommend favorable action, second passage.
For action, Councilman DeLuise, do you want to move it?
Yes, move favorable action.
Seconded by Councilman Foley. Any further questions or comments? Seeing none, clerk will please call the roll. Yes.
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 Next, PCO 6-25, an ordinance to prohibit through trucking on Orchard Avenue. Any objection to the request to hold till 12/15/2025? Seeing none, so held. Next is PCO 13-25, an ordinance amending procedures relative to transfer of tax title to property. The recommendation was to hold till November 17, 2025. Any objection thereto? Seeing none, so held. Next we have, all right, now we're on to the items from a while back now. First is PCR 98-25, known as bid 2026-212. Purchase of purchase of eight police vehicles. This went to the floor without recommendation. It's a 56-6. Administration, do you want to speak on this before we get going?